We talked about it last week. There's been a real difference between the Tennessee Titans this season in home games and road games. Coming off another road loss, their next contest is well away from Nissan Stadium in London on Sunday morning against the Baltimore Ravens. But officially, the Titans are the home team in that game. So what does that mean? I don't know. I don't think any of us know. But we are going to look at that game, look back a little bit at Sunday's loss to the Colts, as usual, and try to figure out what comes next for the Tennessee Titans on this episode of the Believe in Titans podcast with the usual lineup. Former Titans cornerback Denard Walker. Denard, welcome in.
Thank you. Good evening.
John Glennon of the Nashville Post. John Glennon, welcome in.
Hello, David. Hope all are well here.
I am David Beauclair, of course. I think we're all feeling a little better than the Titans were feeling Sunday afternoon. Mike Vrabel discussed this a little bit on Wednesday at 2-3. One of the Titans' big issues on offense has been the inability to score touchdowns, particularly to convert in the red zone. The offense has just 7 touchdowns in 3 games. Mike Vrabel talked about it. They have had 8 drives of 10 plays or more that have ended with a field goal. So moving the ball down the field, you know, controlling, staying ahead of the sticks for a little bit, whatnot, as they like to say, but not getting into the end zone. Denard Walker, what do you see as the biggest issue down there right now? What has to change over the next 12 games?
Well, we were blaming it on the offensive line. That wasn't the problem Sunday. When you look at the perimeter game, D-Hop went for 140, so they were consistent there. The quarterback played well until that last play and the last drive of the game where he threw the pick. He was under duress. I thought Ryan played well. I mean, yeah. So the question is what is the problem, David? No one knows.
Yeah, I mean, how do you finish drives? Everybody knows the goal line is where it is, right? I mean, it's no secret you need to get across it to win games.
Well, it sounds easy, but they wasn't able to do it Sunday but one time. And I'm going to go back on that 4th-and-1. And we have, 13 minutes and 22 seconds in the game. Ryan, they had a great drive, and then they end up in the 4th-and-1. What was it, on like the 10-yard line or 5-yard line? It was right in the red zone, and they couldn't even get it in. So yeah. you got to credit the defensive front for the Colts. They came to play, and let me tell you something. Number 44, that defender, that linebacker from the Colts, he sized up Derrick Henry. He laid the boom on him. And that right there not only set the tone of the game, that was all it was just demoralizing. It was down the hill from there. And that just to show you the inconsistency in the way that they played Sunday.
Yeah, I think, John, talk about this. I mean, maybe a shortage of weapons when you get close to the goal line right now, particularly with Treylon Burks having missed a couple of games. Kyle Phillips was that guy. I remember Kevin Byard talked about it early in training camp last year that Ryan Tannehill has found his red zone guy in Kyle Phillips. Phillips has played just the one game to this point. Is it just a shortage of options right now, or do you see it as something worse than that?
I think that's certainly part of it. You know, Treylon Burks at some point in his career, we think will be a good red zone guy, you know, just because of that size and that catch radius and so forth. And he hasn't been around much, but I think there's more. I went back and looked at the 2 worst red zone games that they have this year. The Colts, they were 1-for-4, and the Saints, they were 0-for-3. So you combine those. Those are 6 failed red zone opportunities. I went back and looked at first downs on all of those plays. Net total on all those 6 first down plays, 0 yards on all those. That's not good. That's not going to set you up well for second down, that's for sure. So then what do you have on third down? Well, on the 6 failures, they had 3rd-and-6, 3rd-and-18, 3rd-and-6. 3rd-and-7, 3rd-and-10, 3rd-and-12. And those third downs, as we know, they become especially, I think, more difficult when you're playing in that condensed red zone area. So they've made it tough on themselves. And the Titans have been awful all year in terms of converting anything over third and five. They are 8 for 39 on conversions of third and five. It's just 21%. That's right near the bottom of the league. So all these are problems. We've also seen penalties. There were a couple of OPIs on Chig Okonkwo. One was declined, and there was a hold against Brewer way back in that Saints game. So those are the some of the things I came up with. And then the other is, you know, I think the Titans were always, you know, at least up until some of last year, they always felt confident they could run that ball into the end zone once they got close. And that's just not been the case for a while now. I looked at the Derrick Henry runs in those two games where against the Colts and Saints, three runs on the six series that failed, three runs for a total of 3 yards. So just not getting it done there. So there, I think those are some of the reasons anyway that we're seeing such a colossal change from a Titans team that had been so good in the red zone for really half a decade right now.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's easy a lot of times for people to say when a play doesn't work, well, that's bad play calling. And you know, if you follow along on X during the games or whatnot, you'll certainly see that. And you know, a lot of times it's amusing, but I think in this case, there is, if not a legitimate argument to be made right now, I think it certainly bears watching as we go forward, because Tim Kelly in the previous 2 seasons that he was an offensive coordinator in 2021 and 2020 with Houston. Now, granted, Houston wasn't a particularly good team in those years, but did have Deshaun Watson in 2020. They were not a great red zone offense. They were 25th in the league in red zone conversions in 2020. They were 28th in the league in red zone conversions rate in 2021. And right now the Titans are 29th with Tim Kelly calling plays. So I think it does bear watching as this season goes along. It you know, what he's trying to do down there, if there's something that consistently shows up that he's trying to do that doesn't work, but it seems like his red zone packages maybe leave a little something to be desired. Certainly, kicking or scoring touchdowns instead of kicking field goals. Let's give Nick Folk credit here again, right? We talked about him a couple weeks ago, but Nick Folk continues to put the ball between the uprights and do everything he can. It looks like it at this point, it's easily the best trade that Rand Carthen has made in his career as a general manager. But they you know, they need him kicking extra points. They don't need him kicking all the field goals that he's kicking. Speaking of kicking, we don't want to kick Denard's guy when he's down here, but Christian Fulton continues to struggle, and Mike Vrabel said this week that he even thought about pulling Fulton from that game Sunday against the Colts. Denard, at what point for a cornerback does confidence really start to become an issue, and what does Fulton need to do to get out of this? Because let's face it, we've seen Christian Fulton play good football. We know he's capable of it. What does he need to do to get back to it at this point?
You know, David, when you're struggling, you know, you really have to take a long look at yourself in this business, because you're gonna hear it. And Christian, these last few games, he has been struggling. We saw that in week one against the Saints, and he was exposed a few times, especially that go ahead deep route. And right now, you know, Christian's going into his fourth year, so he should be well acclimated to this defense. And he was called up on this year, at least going into the season, as being not just a player, but a leader, especially in the secondary. And when you watch him play right now, he doesn't have that swag that we've seen in the past, that we've I got a chance when he, came up last year. Last few seasons, he's been displaying some that athleticism that we saw at LSU. Right now, when you watched him play Sunday, half of the time he was turned around while the receiver was over the top of him, and that's inexcusable. I went back and I just watched him, David, and I go back after that 56-yard scamper by Moss. It was a third and 16, and a cardinal rule for a defensive back is do not allow anything over your head. I mean, keep everything in front of you at all times, but especially on a third down and 16, because that's demoralizing when you get a pass interference call. That's like a free down, and it's a cheap one. And when you look at that play, it's like Christian was turned around on that first one, and Josh Downs was all, he was like already, he was on top of Christian. And then we saw it again with Michael Pittman. He continued to get tangled up with the receivers all game long. And it was frustrating to watch because, again, if you look at the one, what was this, the first series in the third quarter, the Titans was up 13 to 10. Gardner came in the game, which I think they really started to get on the roll when Anthony Richardson went out. He got tangled up with Michael Pittman. Again, that ended up in a score for the Colts because they went ahead and scored, going up 17-13. He doesn't look like he has confidence right now. And a lot of times, I don't know if he's hurt. I don't know if that hamstring is bothering him, but there is something going on. And I don't know if benching him right now is the answer. But sometimes when you sit a player down, what you do is let him settle down a little bit. Let him kind of look at the film and see what he's doing wrong. Because right now he's not correcting those mistakes, and we're going into week six.
Yeah. Is it the kind of thing, I mean, will one really good play sort of snap, be what it takes to snap him out of it? Will it have to be a whole game where he kind of just keeps things in front of him and does the right things? What do you think it will be the magic elixir that'll get him going in the right direction here?
It can start. I'm glad that's a great answer, David. It actually can start with making a play. He hasn't made many plays this year. That's been the problem. He's had a lot of pass interference. He's gotten beat deep quite a bit this season, and we're only going into week six. We saw that in week one against the Saints, and we haven't seen that from Christian Fulton in the past. It was his ability to eliminate the deep ball, and this year it's the complete opposite. So again, it always starts with your confidence. 90% of what you do on that field starts right in your head is what's going on. That's your confidence. When your confidence is shot, you see players doing things for sporadic. And that's what we're seeing, Christian. It's not like Christian to be turned around on a third and long. And he's been consistent this year in doing those kind of plays. And that will get you beat. And the plays that he's giving up, he's making those penalties in really bad situations and times of the game, you've seen the Colts capitalize on because a couple of plays later, they end up scoring.
So, John, is your sense that the decision to stick with Fulton through that game and going ahead, at least as far as we know to this point, is it that Mike Vrabel still believes in him that much, or there's just no better option right now?
Yeah, that is a very good question. And I was just gonna like first just kind of attach some of the numbers to Christian Fulton's struggles. It targeted 18 times, 14 catches for 272 yards. That's a 19.4 yard average on catches he's given up. It's crazy. Four penalties and opponent quarterback rating when they throw at Fulton, 137.8. So it's not pretty, but yeah, I think there is something, Dave, to the fact that little bit limited in options because to me, the clear option, if you're going to sit Fulton, the clear option would be okay. You move, Roger McCreary has been playing slot, but he played outside last year. You move him back outside. You still have Murphy Bunting on the other side, and you move Elijah Molden in as your slot corner then, because he's obviously got a lot of experience there. The problem with that, though, is you can't rely on Elijah Molden because he's in and out of the lineup so often because of injury. He was on the injury report again today with a hamstring. He missed practice. He only played 10 snaps against the Colts. I have to assume that was likely at least partially injury related. So it's hard to count on him as being a regular as part of the three guys there. And if you don't go with that trio, then you're talking about, having McCreary inside, Murphy Bunting outside, and on the other side, instead of Fulton, you're looking at guys like Trey Avery or a Kendall Vildor, who they picked up from waivers. Are you ready to go that route, full time? Maybe, maybe not. My guess is Mike Vrabel isn't ready to take that step quite yet, but maybe one more game. If there's another bad Fulton game coming up here, then you've got the bye week. That's the to me, traditionally you see some changes made with a little bit of extra time there. Maybe that's the time he says, if Fulton can't turn it around this week, enough is enough. And one other thing to point out too, Chris Harris, is a new DBs coach this year and was kind of brought in, obviously, to improve the DBs. Anthony Midgett was the guy last year and took a lot of criticism because the numbers of the DBs weren't very good last year. And Chris Harris has a good background, but we haven't seen much difference so far this year. Not only Christian Fulton, but the DBs in general are giving up too many explosive plays. So, we're looking for him to have some answers to this problem too.
Yeah, the Titans got it, according to reports at least, got into a little bit of a bidding war over Chris Harris. They were not the only team interested in signing him, and that's an excellent point because it's not just Fulton. The safeties have not been quite as good as we expected. I mean, in general, we talked about it the last few weeks that the problem with the defense was they were giving up too many plays down the field in the passing game. It was the run defense was doing its part, and that didn't happen either on Sunday all of a sudden. So it was it's a lot of misery there right now. John, stick with you. Fulton's an easy target right now, but at 2 and 3, there's a lot of guys I think you can say for the Titans right now who need to be better. And as you pointed out, the open date in the schedule's coming up. It's a time when coaches are going to do a lot of self-scouting. They're gonna break down a lot of things, and that is an opportunity to make some changes. So in this last game before the open date, who do you think needs to be better and make a case for themselves to stay in their current role, or maybe even try and expand their role going forward?
Yes, I have to nominate Harold Landry for a wake-up call here. Come on, Harold. We know you missed last year, obviously, with an ACL, which is a tough injury to come back from. But Harold himself said, even in training camp, that he had basically forgotten about the knee injury by then. It had happened a long time ago. He'd had a lot of chance to rehab. He felt good going into the season, and he has been very quiet this year, with the exception of the one sack, big sack against the Los Angeles Chargers that helped the Titans get a win in that game. But overall, he's got five total pressures in five games. Not good. One sack, one hit, and three hurries per PFF. His overall grade, PFF again, 47.3. Not good. And again, everybody knows that this is a guy who signed a 5-year, $87 million deal, and right before the ACL injury. So is it health? Is the knee still slowing him down? He also was on the injury report this year with an abdomen too. He looks healthy. He's playing a lot of snaps out there. But he's just the production is not there right now. And if anything could help this Titans secondary that we just talked about, it's a little bit more pressure. The guys off the edge, especially, I think, and in particular, Harold Landry.
Yeah, in typical fashion, Harold Landry leads the edge rushers in defensive snaps played, which is not unusual for him, right? That has been the big discussion in recent years, actually, that how do you get Harold Landry a little more rest? And that's the thing. He's played 71.8% of the snaps on defense, which is way down from what we've seen from him in recent years. A lot of times he's been 85 and above, at times he's been more than 90% of defensive snaps played. So you know, you would hope, at least the feeling was always less is more with Harold Landry, and that has not been the case so far this year. Right now, less is less, and it is surprising given you know, given the way we've seen guys come back from ACLs, given the amount of time that Landry had to do the exactly that this last year, you would have expected that he'd have been back to being Harold Landry, but not yet, which is not to say he's not going to get there, but certainly not yet. Denard, if you're handing out wake up calls this weekend, whose phone are you ringing?
I sure hate to say this, but the king is not looking like the king.
Wow.
I know. It's hard for me, especially watching that game Sunday. It looked like Tajay Spears gave this offense just a little bit different gear. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's the new offensive coordinator, but I go back to the fact that it was in the fourth quarter in about 13 minutes, and the game was kind of shifting, and on that fourth and one. And how many times have we seen throughout the years Derek King, I mean, the King gets stopped? And that was Zaire Franklin, number 44, for the Colts, that put that hit on him. That was one-on-one. How many times have we seen Derek get tackled by one player? David, can you tell
and
me?
Driven backward, not even just
he went way backwards, and yeah, that was the problem. We haven't seen that in a long time. And what's amazing, you're talking about in 35 games over his career. I mean, what he's had 35 games played with over 100 yards, 100 plus yards rushing. He had against Cincinnati 22 carries and 122 yards. Ran for a rushing TD, and he threw a rushing TD, and it was kind of like, okay, here he goes. You know, here comes the king. It just was taking him some time, get the rust off. But once again, it looks like he regressed. Sunday, what, 13 carries, 43 yards. He was a non-factor in the offense, and we know that this offense live and die on the play of Derrick Henry. So they look – something is going on right now with Tim Kelly and Derrick Henry. Something is going on. They're not meshing. And I don't know what it is, but you're trying to tell me that in five games he has 330 yards rushing and two rushing touchdowns? That's not king numbers.
No, it's not. And, you know, again, it's always going to be fair to wonder how much age and usage has caught up to him. It is continuing to catch up to him. But, you know, he's a guy I'm sure no one is ready to write off yet. But I agree with you, Denard. For the first time Sunday, I was looking at Tajay Spears going, yeah, you know, he's certainly more than just a change of pace back, and he's a guy who really could warrant more use here as the season goes on. You know, the book has always been Derrick Henry gets better as the year goes on, and defenses get a little more tired, and maybe that'll still happen, but you know, you look at some of the moments Spears had, like the one botched handoff where he was going left and he, you know, makes something out of it going right. Like he, you know, maybe the Titans would never run that play with Henry in there in the game, but it's tough to imagine Henry would have gotten as much out of that right now as.
And also the touchdown, the end around. Yeah. I mean, we've never seen Derek do a play. You know, he doesn't do plays like that. But you saw Tajay Spears, he just gives him like a different dimension. It just seems like every time he's in the game, it's like something special is about to happen. Let's just kind of wait and see. And it's just like he's brought a spark to this offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people for the first time can finally imagine this offense without Derrick Henry. You know, the last few years it's been so much Derrick Henry, and people revel in what he's been able to do and how much fun he's been. And it's almost like you just can't imagine how, you know, how this team's ever going to function when he gets old and has to retire and whatnot. But now all of a sudden you can see that and feel a little bit of that excitement. I'm going to send my wake up call to Chig Okonkwo. No, nobody had more of an opportunity to play a much bigger role this year than Chig. And you know, that's a guy similar to the way we're talking about Spears. When he was on the field last year, things seem to happen. And you just go back to the game at Indianapolis last year when he caught the third down pass after lining up at fullback. That was sort of the moment we all took notice of him and said, boy, this guy you can really do some things with. Well, through five games, he has 15 receptions, which, you know, that's an okay number, three a game, but for 104 yards, an average of 6.9 a pop, among the top 25 tight ends in receptions right now, only one, Zach Ertz, who is 33 years old, has a worse yards per reception average than Chig Okonkwo does. And to make matters worse, Okonkwo's got four penalties called against him. He's actually had five thrown against him. One of them was declined. He is the most penalized member of the Tennessee Titans right now, which is stunning to me when you think about, you know, all the holds that get, all the offensive holdings that get called, all the defensive pass interferences that get called, and what have you. The fact that he's piling up penalties that way is astonishing to me. And he, you know, he needs to be better. This team let Austin Hooper walk. This team let Jeff Swaim walk. This team turned over the tight end room to make it Chig Okonkwo's room. And he hasn't delivered to the anywhere near the degree that they anticipated at this point. So we'll see. Those are our wake up calls for this week. And speaking of wake up calls, I'm assuming some of the Titans will need wake up calls this weekend. As we mentioned, they're playing in London against the Baltimore Ravens. And interestingly, the Titans are not traveling to London until following Thursday's practice. They practiced in Nashville on Wednesday, practicing in Nashville on Thursday. Then they're going to get on the plane, fly over, conduct what Mike Vrabel keeps calling a normal Friday practice when they get there, and try to adjust their body clocks accordingly and what have you. The Ravens, in stark contrast, flew over on Monday. They want to settle in and see what they can do doing it that way. John, as you look at this, does one of those approaches make more sense to you than the other?
Yeah, I can see both sides of the equation. You know, I think most teams have chosen the approach that the Titans are going with now, and that's to go over later. And that way you can say, okay, we can control all the variables, you know, as far as two solid practice days, you know, our normal Wednesday and Thursday practice days. We're going to do everything just like we always take prep days, those where you get most of the stuff done. What you run into, though, obviously, is by getting over there late in the week, you have less time to adjust to body clock, you know, sleep deprivation, the change of time zones, et cetera, you know, if there are problems, you know, little travel problems, you're dealing with them as you're getting closer to the game also. So that's the downside there. I'm kind of intrigued, like the Ravens, this has not really been an approach that many teams, I don't think, have taken over the years for these London games, is going over early. The reason that the Ravens are doing this is because they took the traditional approach in 2017 and got their rear ends handed to them 44-7 by Jacksonville. So basically John Harbaugh said, we want to do everything different this time around. So we don't want to go through that kind of routine again. But, you know, I kind of like it because they get all the, you know, the sleep deprivation, the change of time zones, all that stuff, that they get that ticking at the beginning of the week. So within a couple of days, you're far more adjusted to it. And by Wednesday, today, the Ravens had a practice over in London today. Presumably, you know, you're feeling at home and you've got two, three regular days of practice over there and you've already put the adjustment behind you. So I if I had to favor, I, you know, I kind of like that approach a little more. And I'm curious to see how the Ravens will do, you know, against the Titans and what they have to say about that approach afterwards, because I, as I say, it does make sense to get all the little, to get all that stuff out of the way, start the adjustment process earlier, and then you're only focused on football for a good portion of that week.
Denard, if you were still playing and the coaches asked you, what would your preference be?
I would do like Baltimore. I mean, I would be over there right now trying to get acclimated to that time zone because I know what jet lag feels like, and that's just from flying from like Nashville to Seattle. So I couldn't
Yeah.
imagine flying from Nashville to London. That is a wow. How long of a flight is that?
About 8 hours.
8 hours.
Yeah. And it's a 6 hour time difference too that
Yes,
we're talking
I know because I know the game is what at 8:30.
about.
I mean, you did that a couple times when you were with the Titans, didn't you? When you went out west, didn't Jeff Fisher take you guys out there on Friday, even to give you an extra day just to adjust to the 2 hour time difference?
Yeah, we left on Fridays. Anytime we did a West Coast, we had a West Coast schedule, we would leave on a Friday and just to kind of get acclimated because we tried that one time going to Seattle the day before, and it didn't, it wasn't nice. Most guys were jet lagging a 5 hour, it was about 4.5 hour flight. So again, I would, it all comes down who's going to win this game. I truly believe if they can get over and get acclimated, then they'll be okay.
Yeah, I mean, whoever wins, they made the right choice, right? But
Exactly.
I mean, let's just say this: Jacksonville just played two games in a row over there, so they had even more time than the Ravens. Welcome the Buffalo Bills over there last week. The Bills looked like maybe the best team in the NFL in weeks 2, 3, and 4, and Jacksonville shut that offense down and won that game 25-20. I almost. I get what Mike Vrabel is trying to do and keep things as normal as possible, but I'm with you guys. Like I would like to get there and sort of get my feet under me rather than feel like, okay, now I'm here and everything's going to be crazy for the next 48 hours and then we'll get on a plane and come back home. But again, like we say, whoever wins, they made the right choice. So that begs the question, John Glennon, who's going to win this Sunday and why?
First, just one little point I was going to add on our previous topic there, David, taking us back to our days covering the Predators. It was always the debate, remember, teams going into Colorado.
Yeah.
When you had a game there in the altitude of Colorado, whether you wanted to, if you had a few days beforehand, whether you wanted to go out a few days early, get used to the altitude, if that would help, or if you wanted to go in there very late to Colorado and spend as little time in there so you're not worried about the altitude and it wouldn't affect you. There was always that back and forth as well. But anyway, going to the game this week, Titans fans should probably be happy because I've been so wrong this year. And I'll throw this out there. I kind of feel better about the Ravens' chances this Sunday. I gotta say it's gonna be a tough chore for the Titans to stop Baltimore. I don't think Baltimore is gonna have the kind of sloppy performance the Ravens did last week against Pittsburgh. Less turnovers, less drop passes. There's a lot of weapons on that team. And the Titans just haven't shown us a lot in the way of offense so far. So I'm leaning towards the Ravens, which undoubtedly means the Titans will win this Sunday.
Denard Walker, what do you think happens Sunday?
Well, this Ravens defense, I mean, they're good. They play sloppy against Pittsburgh, but man, I'll tell you what, this defense is stingy. They're holding running backs to about 3.8 yards per carry. And if you look at Tennessee, they haven't been able to generate a consistent running game. And then if you look at the Ravens pass defense, they're right there in the top five. I think they're number three. I just give it up about 72.6 yards catch. So again, I like Baltimore this game. I just think Tennessee right now they got an identity problem. Until they get that corrected, I don't see this team really doing anything major, at least at this point of the season.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I like the Ravens in this one too. We talked about the Titans' red zone issues on offense. Baltimore has the best red zone defense in the league through the first five games this season. So that's a bad combination right there. doesn't hurt. It doesn't help. Jeffrey Simmons is hurting. He's on the first injury report of the week with a shoulder issue and did not practice. Tyrann Tartt did not practice also on Wednesday. Treylon Burks still hurting. No indication yet that he's on his way back. That's a lot of beef and a lot of good quality snaps right there if those three guys can't play. We saw it against Cincinnati. We've said this, Mike Vrabel's teams, when they are when you least expect it, they sort of tend to step up and play well. So there's always that, but until I see them play well outside of Nissan Stadium, I'm not going to buy this. The fact that they're the home team for this game means anything. I'm looking at it as this is another game outside of Nissan Stadium. This team has to figure some things out without its crowd helping right now. So until I see it, I'm not going to believe it. I think the Ravens too, but we will all be up early. We will get our wake up calls early Sunday morning, get up and watch the game, and we will be back here to talk about it next week. Until then, John Glennon, thank you.
Thank you.
Denard Walker, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And for me, David Beauclair, thank you all, as always, for listening to the Believe in Titans podcast.